the one main difference between El Salvador and any other country I've seen is the optimism. There's optimism here. People are looking into the future with hope, with plans, with visions. People will tell you, this country, you know, things are way better here than they used to be. Whereas if you go to Germany, for example, people will tell you the opposite. That sounds like a simple thing, but it makes a world of a difference. This country has regained its collective identity, and they are proud to show their country. They are proud to show the things they have, the volcanoes, the surf, the pupusas, the Bitcoin law, even. This country wants Bitcoiners to come here. And so, of course, Bitcoiners want to come here. I don't want to be working against the official narrative of my government all the time. That's very tiring and exhausting. Like, the moment you experience the opposite, you don't want to go back.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. The Bitcoin time chain is 834559, and the value of one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. Today's episode is Bitcoin Talk, where I talk with my guest about Bitcoin and whatever else comes up. Today, that guest is Lena Zaike, the creator of everyone's favorite Bitcoin comic, plushie, and all-around character, the Little Hodler. Lena just moved to El Salvador, so we go deep into what motivated her to make the move to Bitcoin country, what she thinks of it, the misperceptions she sees from the outside looking in, and advice for those looking to move to or just visit El Salvador. Before we dive in, if you like the Bitcoin Podcast, please share an episode you find valuable on Noster or Twitter, or if you listen on Fountain, which I recommend because honestly it's just so much better than any of the other podcasting platforms out there, and you can earn Bitcoin by listening to this and other podcasts. But anyway, if you're listening on Fountain, create a clip of an episode you find valuable so it reaches more people. I am a one-man show trying to build out another fucking Bitcoin podcast, so the best way you can support this show is to share it with your friends, family, or just with strangers on the internet. You can also support this show by going to bitbox.swiss/walker and using the promo code Walker to get yourself 5% off the fully open source Bitcoin-only Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. As always, you can watch the video version of this episode on Rumble, YouTube, or X. Just search at Walker America, or listen on Fountain.fm or wherever you get your podcasts by searching for The Bitcoin Podcast. And if you are a Bitcoin-only company interested in sponsoring another fucking Bitcoin podcast, hit me up on social media or through the website bitcoinpodcast.net. Without further ado, let's get into this Bitcoin talk with Lena Zaike. How are you doing? Last time, I'm trying to think, last time we saw you was it in Prague? Does that sound right?
Prague, yeah.
I think it was Prague. Yeah. It feels like a long time. We've been, obviously with the baby and everything, we have been out of the loop for a little while. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. But no, we're,
at the time, I didn't know Carla was pregnant.
Still hush, hush, at that point, just cause it was fairly early on. But yeah, now she was pregnant during that time. She was actually pregnant during a Bitcoin conference in Miami too. So that was like very early on in the process. So technically our little guy has already been to a couple of Bitcoin conferences. He just was in the womb during it. So
they say you should play classical music when you're pregnant, so the kid becomes like cultured or whatever. Yeah. I wonder what's going to happen to him if he went to conferences.
He's just gonna start gently having glowing laser eyes the older he gets. No, I mean it's some good some pretty good information to soak up though. I mean, the nice thing about Bitcoin conferences too is you always, you know, he'll get a chance to hear a bunch of different languages spoken and very anti-state rhetoric, if he can understand it yet, we'll see. So I mean I can't imagine much better information to be putting into his little forming brain. And you gotta start him young, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's so great. Oh my God, I'm so
Yeah.
happy for you.
We're very very excited with the little guy. He's been a good time so far. Man, they get big fast though. It's wild. Like
Really?
they just grow. And
Wow.
I mean, kid eats a lot, so that's good. But I think he's looking like he's going to be bigger than me. So yeah, watch out. He's going to be a large guy.
Oh, that's so great. Oh my God, that's
Yeah.
amazing.
But how are you doing now? You are full on living in El Salvador now, right?
Yes,
That's
sir.
amazing. When did you officially make the move?
So, oh my God, everything happened after we met because we met in June, right? So
Yeah, that would have been
actually,
June.
yes, yeah, so I went in August, and I spent like almost 2 weeks there. But I just really, really loved it there. So I went, that was my first time. And then a month later, I came back because I loved it so much. And then I had to leave again because it was conferences, like it was conference season, right?
Yeah.
And after conference season, end of October, I think Lugano was the last one, then I came back here and then I just didn't leave. So now I
Wow.
have my, yeah, now I have my residence, my company's here. Yeah. My stuff is here. I mean, I don't have much stuff. I just sent myself a bunch of plushies
I was gonna
and got a
say, I
piano.
mean,
Yeah.
the most important things, a piano and plenty of plush
Yeah.
little holders.
But you know, this frame is basically all I have. So, oh, I also have a PlayStation.
Hey, okay, so you truly have all the essentials. I mean that's good. It's anything that is not pictured is basically just Bitcoin being stacked, right? That's that's what it
I
comes
don't
down
have
to.
any, but theoretically
Of
it would
course
be
not,
if
me
I,
neither.
yeah.
But I'd like some
Yeah.
someday. Oh man. Well, great. Well, I'm glad we were getting a chance to talk here, just to catch up for one, but then also because I think this journey of yours with going to El Salvador, I think it's something that is really kind of interesting and exciting for a lot of people because there are probably a lot of folks around the world from all sorts of countries who are looking at what's happening in El Salvador and thinking, you know what? Things don't look quite as hopeful in my country. And maybe it's time to make a move. Like we live in this globally connected world now. If you are able to have your laptop, most people can work from most places. And so, I wanted a chance to kind of talk to you about that and obviously talk about, I'm just a huge fan of the Little Hodler. Who is not? I mean, you've built so, I've got a few of them back here, and I think I tried to. I'm pretty sure we've got one of the like original ones too that we got at Bitcoin Conf a couple of years ago. Well, not like original, but like the more,
Special edition.
yeah. I think something like that. But they're just the best, and the comic strips that you put out as well are always. First of all, you're able to just pick up the zeitgeist of the moment so quickly and get it out there, and they're always just so right on the mark. And clearly they resonate with people too, because it's like this adorable little character who you look at and if you don't read what it's saying yet, you look at it and you're like, oh, well, that's cute, like perhaps some little children's comic. And then you read it and it's all this incredibly poignant kind of rebuke of the clown world, fiat world shenanigans, and the hopefulness of Bitcoin rolled into one. And I just think it's so brilliant. So maybe a good place for us to start is, can you kind of just tell us, like, first of all, who you are and how did you get here today to be making, having this business where that you have now brought to El Salvador, you're making these adorable plush little hodlers, and you're creating these incredible comic strips that just about, I think, every one you make goes like viral or mini viral. Like it's quite impressive. So how did you get here to be doing this today, Lena?
Wait, the first question was, who am I, right? I'm Lena.
Yeah.
I'm Lena. I am, well, hold on. Yeah, I'm Lena. I'm from Germany. There you go. That's me. And I make Bitcoin comics. So I started this in 2020, actually. So at the time, I was working in the Bitcoin space, but I was working in more in marketing. Oh, I still do marketing, but now I do it for my plushies. And I was also active on Bitcoin Twitter at the time. And really, what it boils down to, the reason why I started doing the comics is because I couldn't handle the toxicity. So You know, at the time, around that time when I made my first comic, Bitcoin was like $9,000, and we had that whole 9,000 meme. Oh my God, the Dragon Ball creator died.
I saw
I'm so
that.
sad.
I just saw that today. I was like, oh my gosh. Like
Yeah.
I didn't watch a ton of like anime growing up, but Dragon Ball Z was one that I watched like religiously. I saw that. That's a sad moment. It's like a part of childhood that kind of dies. But now it also, I feel like it's going to encourage people. Like I want to go back and rewatch everything now. Like I feel like when that happens, when some like creator passes away, everybody says, wait, I love that so much. It was such a big part of who I was growing up. Let me go revisit it through a new lens. And like you get a new appreciation for it, you know, and they live on through their work, which I think is kind of beautiful.
Same feeling. Everybody's really sad, but they celebrate his life's work. And I
Yeah.
love that. I mean, what more can you ask for? No, that's a great legacy.
Yeah, it is.
But it's still sad. Wow, I totally got sidetracked because of
It's
the over
okay.
9,000 memes. Yeah, so Bitcoin was over 9,000 for like a month straight. It was right after the halving. And we all knew it was a similar sense, like a similar feeling to right now. Where we're like, okay, once we cross the threshold, it's just gonna go way up. And we knew that at the time it was 10K. So we knew it was gonna go there. We just didn't quite know when. And it was this like a vibe of anticipation in among Bitcoiners. And I was already active on Bitcoin Twitter at the time. I was doing like, you know, there these super hyper bullish Bitcoin tweets were doing really well at the time.
Yeah.
And I did a bunch of those because, you know, they would get you impressions and followers, and that actually worked. But my problem was that doing these controversial tweets would make me really self-conscious because I didn't want to get hate in the comments. So I would post a tweet and then I would turn off my notifications for the rest of the day, which is kind of lame. But yeah, so that was kind of my routine at the time. And then that when I made the first comic, it was like July 2020. I just had the idea. Like I'd like to tell a grand story about it, but I had an idea for a comic. I don't know where it came from. It just kind of appeared, and I just kind of made it on PowerPoint at the time. It was super raw and ugly.
Wow.
Yeah, sometimes people still pull it up, and it's also kind of like it's a bit nostalgic. I like it. I like looking at it. But yeah, so I did that. And it fit the theme at the time, it fit the mood at the time, and it became my most liked tweet at the time. So it was just like randomly I discovered something that I didn't know was there, like a demand for something that I like, that was completely unexpected for me. So that was the first time I made a comic. But it was a one-off thing. Didn't have any because it appeared so suddenly. I had no more ideas. It wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna make a bunch of comics now. No, just a random idea. And I had another random idea for another comic a couple months later, and that went equally viral. So then I thought, oh my God, I wish I had more ideas, but I don't. Like, where's this coming from? I don't know. So it took until April 2021, and at that time I was. I was in Taiwan at that time, and I was in a quarantine hotel.
Oh
And
my God.
yeah, so the thing is that I don't know, like I actually don't know much about how I was in the States. I was living in Taiwan at the time, and I left the country and came back, which was very stupid of me because in Asia they the like things were run differently there, and it was people were okay with it. Right, so you just kind of have to go along. So I was in a quarantine hotel, which basically meant they would lock you up for 15 days,
Oh.
and then literally like lock the door though, and bring you food 3 times a day. And if you needed anything, you'd have to time it with the delivery of food, otherwise you wouldn't get it. So you had like a window. They would call you in the morning, and at night the reception would call you and ask you to tell them your temperature. And the police would, when you entered the country, would grab your phone number and start GPS tracking your phone so that you don't leave home. And the police would also call you twice a day to make sure you didn't leave without your phone.
Dear Lord.
Yeah. Long story short, I was there for 15 days. I was bored out of my mind, and I made a comic because I had another idea randomly again. But this time I was like, okay, look, if I'm going to be doing this, I might as well draw it myself. So that was when I drew the first comic with the actual little hodler. And he looked pretty much the same as right now. So he was my first attempt at little hodler is the way he looks today. And I made a comic, and that became one of my most liked tweets ever to date. And it became so popular, and it's the comic with the little hodler who's a whole coiner, and no, he has a whole Bitcoin, and he lives in a citadel at the end of the comic.
I know it well. I know it well.
Yeah. So yeah, people still reference that today. It makes me so happy. But yeah, so that was, I would say, the kickoff, because from that point I said, okay, I need to turn this into something where I can actually, I don't rely on my brain randomly coming up with things every couple months. But then I sat down, because I had nothing to do, I sat down and just thought up all these comic ideas. A lot of them were very lame. But as you do something, you get better at it. So with time, like, I would improve my skill set and my, I don't know, comicification skills. So I did that, and it turned from a hobby into a business when I made a plushie, and people started, I just made it for myself. Again, I just made it for fun because I wanted it. I posted it, and then people started asking, can I get one? Can I get one? And then I launched a store, and then it became a business. And so, yeah, it just kind of evolved like that.
There's a lot of serendipity in that story. You know, I mean, who knows, maybe if you weren't locked in that hotel room in that quarantine, you wouldn't have had like the frustration of boredom where you said, you know what, let me just dive into this. Like, it's funny how those things kind of work out. I mean, I'm sure looking back, it would have been a lot nicer not to be locked in that hotel room, but still, like, at least something really incredible came out of it. And something that now, like, is such a, I mean, it's truly an icon. It is iconic, you know, and the fact, I love that now you're doing all the conference series, like every conference wants to have their own little hodler. And I think we've got Prague back here, BT's, the Bitcoin Ski Summit, and Pacific Bitcoin, I believe. Or maybe there's a, let's see. I think we also have a Panties for Bitcoin one lying around here somewhere, which is a great one, you know.
I love it. It's one of my favorites.
it's so great. And they're such a very cool Bitcoin company and a great family. Like, it's wonderful to see that. But I love this. And you know, now it seems that you, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems that you're at this point where when you see something in the news or, you know, on social media, whatever, is that where you're getting a lot of your inspiration now? Like, you see something that is just silly, whether it's about some sort of fiat money printing or like you've been doing some with, you know, comments about El Salvador recently, which have been really just spot on. Is that where you're basically, you know, it's like, okay, you see something where you're like, this is ridiculous, I need to make a comic about this? Or like, is that kind of some of the serendipity that happens now?
Yeah, I think I feel pretty similar to how you feel, because I see what you tweet, and sometimes you just see the ridiculousness and you're just like, is this real? This, like, these stories, they write themselves. They actually write themselves. A lot of the time with the, like, the stuff that happens, I just kind of draw it. I don't think of anything myself, because you have the silly storyline and then you have the really silly punchline, and that's all I do. I kind of simplify it and give him a silly face. So a lot of the time, these things write themselves. So yeah, I do that. I look at the news, and a lot of people say a lot of stupid things about Bitcoin. And that deserves some exposure. And then there's some evergreens, right? Sometimes I just do evergreen comics or some, like, concept. I have one that was pretty popular. It was about the concept of anti-fragility, because that's kind of hard to explain with words. And sometimes I try to take something like that and make it, like, explain it in pictures. Or like the, I did that with the Cantillon effect. Cantillon, Cantillon, I don't know.
I think it can go either way, because technically Richard Cantillon, or Cantillon, was Irish-French. So I think technically you can say it either way, if I'm not mistaken. So no judgment here, however you want to pronounce it, is my point.
Okay. All right. I just realized I might have never said that word out loud.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It depends if I'm how much I'm trying to mock somebody, like when I'm if I'm using the, you know, the Cantillon effect. It's a fun word, but now I digress. I digress into mocking the French. I love the French, but they're fun to mock as well.
I'm German. I'm not allowed to speak up about this.
Yes, naturally. Okay, so next topic. Yeah. No, I love that, though. I mean, I think what you said is so powerful, because you're really, the world is so ridiculous already that the headlines you see almost seem like they must be satire. Like, this is the point that I'm at right now, where I read something and if it didn't have that, you know, New York Times or Wall Street Journal or whatever emblazoned on it, I would think it was satire. And perhaps they don't even realize that they are at this point of just absurdity, where, I mean, we know that trust in these legacy institutions is at an all-time low. It's dying. They're losing their power. There's a reason that all of these legacy media institutions are firing record numbers of people right now, because they don't have the readership they used to, because everyone is a journalist now, thanks to social media. This is a powerful thing. It's a decentralizing force. But yeah, they keep persisting.
Not actually journalists. It's another thing. No. So they might have the job title journalist, but what are they doing? They're writing opinion pieces.
It's
poorly researched opinion pieces.
let's be honest. It's propaganda. Just thinly veiled propaganda. And it's such a beautiful thing to be able to hold it. I think what you do is kind of hold this mirror up to that with this comic, where you're just, you know, again, use their own words against them, show how ridiculous it is by putting it into this cute little comic with these adorable characters. But it's really very subversive, though, in a very good way. I mean, because you're able to show how ridiculous what they're doing is, not in this aggressive way where you're saying, you know, fuck these fucking propagandists. Like, no, it's just here's a cute little comic. I'm just saying what you said. Look at how ridiculous you are. You know, you've got clown makeup all over your faces. So I love it. And I think, you know, some of your recent Bukele ones, I also liked the one that was, I think it'll be a very evergreen one, about kind of the last bull market versus this one, or the last run up to 69K versus this one, and how, you know, it was built on this teetering tower of FTX and all this other crypto stuff that got associated with Bitcoin. And now you're building this solid foundation with nation state adoption, with these ETFs, with just less hype, maybe. It feels like we're not at peak hype yet, like not even close. Like, this is just like insider hype still. I don't know, but I'm curious, you know, what do you find that the evergreen ones are typically the best performing in terms of just the engagement they get? Or is it kind of the ones that are coming out right as something ridiculous is happening, and you see that people just pick up on it? Like, or does it kind of even out? What's the feel there?
It does even out. I have some evergreens that I know they're going to be liked. It always depends on the timing. So sometimes you can post an evergreen and it's badly timed. Timing is so important. But then there's also just some that are like, you can only use them once. But they work at that time. For example, when Greenpeace did the beautiful skull of Satoshi, I did a comic about it and it was super popular, which again, that comic too was just picturing reality, which this is in many cases, that's all I do. I probably I simplify it to a point where you can really tell the ridiculousness of it. So that worked very well. But then, yeah, I do have evergreens, and I have some that they will always be popular because they are timeless.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last one I did about the all-time high too, that was just a random idea. Just also funny. Sometimes I think for days or weeks, I think about a comic idea, and then I post it and it's like
and just a dud. Just randomly,
yeah. And sometimes I randomly come up with something and it just works. So that happened with the all-time high comic, actually.
Speaking of all-time highs, with Bitcoin making fresh highs seemingly daily in its fiat price, it's a great time to level up your security. Head to bitbox.swiss/walker and use promo code WALKER to get 5% off the Bitcoin-only Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Then get your Bitcoin off the exchange and into your own self-custody. The Bitbox O2 is easy as hell to use, whether you are new to Bitcoin or a seasoned psychopath. It's Bitcoin only, and it's fully open source. You can head to their GitHub and check for yourself. There is no need to trust me. And when you go to bitbox.swiss/walker and use the promo code WALKER, not only do you get 5% off, but you also help support this fucking podcast. So thank you. I think you're so right about timing. Like, that's something that Carl and I noticed so much when we recently, like just a couple of days ago, made a video, but we haven't been making any as consistently now because we've got the, a human to raise and take care of. But that was the thing that we there would be some that we thought, oh my God, this is hilarious. People are going to love this. It's going to go crazy. And then you post and it's just like, wow, like, not, you know, just really kind of lackluster. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe we missed something. But then other times, ones that we spend extremely little time on and just happen to be timed right, like it happens to capture that the moment. That's honestly, it makes the majority of the difference. And I think that's true with so much of just messaging in general, of actual like journalism in general too. Like, are you able to capture what's happening in this moment and tap into what people are feeling right now, into their frustrations, into what's exciting them or angering them? That's how you really get people to jump on board and say like, yes, this captures what I'm feeling right now in a very simplified way that I couldn't exactly express, but now you've done it in a comic or in a video. And it's a powerful thing. Like, ultimately every one of those comics is its own meme. Like, it is a way for you to transmit a lot of information in a very condensed format. I mean, in a format that literally like a child can read and understand, and also say like, you know, mommy, daddy, look at the cute little hodler. Like, it's quite brilliant there. And I mean, how many, if I can ask, how many different plushies do you have now? Like, how do you know how many different iterations of it you've done? Okay, so a lot.
A lot, yeah. I'm pretty sure we made over 30 special editions.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I have my own, obviously. And then what also happened over time is that I would create new characters as needed. And I started with the little hodler and the little no corner. Those were my mm-hmm. first two characters. And then as time went whenever I needed somebody new, I would create somebody new, and then they would sort of organically get their own personality, like the little printer, for example.
Love the little printer. Great character.
He's my favorite. Or one of my favorites. Sorry. It's like, sorry, not, you're all my favorites. He's one of my favorites because he just sort of had this personality that became a thing where he's just like being abused by the Fed and he's just kind of doing his job, but he's too agreeable to speak up. And that just kind of happened. And because of that, I started, it developed into this universe. And then obviously now I'm working on making each of them into a plushie, starting with the most popular ones. So I had the, doing this, like I had a little Satoshi, yeah. I had a little printer, then, We have the Bitcoin, we have Bukele, who's extremely popular, and then a bunch of others. One day I'll make the little no corner, but...
Maybe last. The no corner's last of the party anyway. speaking of Bukele, I want to... Because I could talk about little hodlers all day long, so I have to give
sorry,
myself...
Can I just...
Oh, yeah,
I just say, like, I feel so... Like, the way you interpret and describe the little hodler, nobody has ever described it like that to me. That is one-to-one what I wanted to achieve. Like, I feel so happy. I kind of want to record that and, like, I don't know, put it on my website.
I'll send it right to you. I'm happy to have it be a testimonial. No, because I really do think that it's within Bitcoin, Bitcoin doesn't care, right? But Bitcoiners care a lot. And I think that different Bitcoiners find different ways to express how much Bitcoin and this monetary revolution means to them. And you have found a really powerful way of expressing that. And ultimately, I think it's a great example that you set for Bitcoiners everywhere who are thinking, you know, I want to, maybe they don't code, like, and they're thinking, I want to be able to do something, you know, I can't code. Is it going to be worthwhile for me to learn to code and then to try to contribute in some way? Most likely not at this point, you know, but if you want to do that, more power to you, people. But there are so many ways that you can contribute into getting Bitcoin into the greater consciousness and, you know, find something that you can also enjoy doing. Like, I assume that you still very much enjoy creating these comics, creating these plushies, because they seem to be full of that joy. Like, they're happy little things, but they shine that mirror back onto the broken system that we have. And so if you're listening out there, it's like, find something that allows you to help shine that mirror back on our broken system. Because ultimately, like, it all comes down to memes, right? Like, it all comes down to how can we make this really, really complex thing, which is Bitcoin or the fiat monetary system, how can we distill that into something that anyone can understand? And they don't have to be a PhD economist or computer scientist, although sometimes those most educated in that field have some great difficulty understanding Bitcoin, but that's a different story. But what you've done is a really great, I think, case study for people to look at and say, okay, Lena made comics and ended up building a business out of these comics. And at the same time, these comics go viral and are seen by people not just within Bitcoin, but outside of Bitcoin, which is ultimately what we want, right? Like, your innocent little comic has a better chance of going viral than somebody who is, you know, ranting on a 5-hour Bitcoin podcast about how the state is, you know, just going through this totalitarian power grab. Like, certain things reach outside the bubble and certain things are made for those within the bubble. And I think the little hodler is a little bit of both. People within the bubble love it, and people outside the bubble might actually drink in some of what, you know, it's putting out there. So I think it's a beautiful synergy there. Please do. Please do. I'll send it all to you. But if you're good with it, I'd like to switch gears a little bit. And I'd love to talk, cause you brought up the Bukele little hodler, which I love his little hat. You know, it's great. You have recently moved to El Salvador. You moved from Germany. That's quite a large cultural shift. Can you talk just a little bit about kind of what made you finally decide to pull that trigger and move, truly across the world to a completely different culture, to a place that has had quite a both happy recently, but very sad and tragic history before a few years ago. But is now on this up and up. What was your moment where you said, you know what, I'm just going to pick up everything and I'm going to move to El Salvador and start there?
Well, to be fair, I was already not living in Germany anymore, actually.
Okay,
fair
enough.
So I would say I'm German and I moved to El Salvador, which is true, but I actually left Germany 10 years ago. So I finished high school and then I left. At the time I left because I had some like dissatisfaction, but I just generally at the time I just felt like I wanted to go out into the world. I spent a lot of the last 10 years in Asia. I lived in Southeast Asia and East Asia, Japan, Taiwan, Malaysia, Philippines, like that corner of the world. And when I, like right before I moved to El Salvador, I was living between Malta and Turkey. And So El Salvador was on my radar because of the Bitcoin law. So about 2 years ago, when that happened, obviously, like that was the first time, like I'm almost ashamed to say that, but that was the first time I heard about El Salvador. So I didn't know anything about the country at the time. And then suddenly it popped up everywhere, which shows you what a brilliant move that was, even just in the sense of getting exposure and sort of switching up the headlines that the country would get on the world stage. But yeah, so I did some comics about it at the time because the great inspiration for a comic. Literally, my first comic about it was the reaction of the world to El Salvador adopting Bitcoin as legal tender, being like, oh, but that's such a small country. That doesn't matter. That doesn't do anything. Again, it wrote itself. I made a comic out of it. And that, too, is one of my most popular comics. And that comic back then earned me the presidential follow. So, wow. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And so that's how he became aware of the little hodler. So a couple months later, Bukele was coming to Turkey for a state visit. And that was around that time, everybody was like, oh, he's going to orange pill Erdogan. He's going to make him like start Bitcoin mining. Obviously not. But, you know, we were hopeful.
Yeah.
So he actually asked me if he could get a hodler. So when he came to, yeah, he wanted one. I was like, what? But yeah, so he came to Istanbul, and that's where I first met him, and I brought him a hodler. So I had a chance to like have a bit of a conversation, and at that point I decided, okay, I have to see El Salvador. But for some reason, after that, it still took me a year and a half. I don't know, now I think about it, those are like lifelong regrets. But like a year and a half later, I made it. I made it to El Salvador. I just like, I can never, like, sometimes I listen to myself talk about El Salvador and I'm like, okay, like that just sounds so like cheesy and dreamy and like head up in the clouds. I just don't know how to better communicate this. There's, from the moment you set foot here, and everybody who comes here is going to tell you this, you feel the difference. And I had the same thing. So I first came here in August last year, and I just went around the country, and I had some, like, and I knew some people here who would, like, immediately they were there to help me, and they took me around the country and showed me all the things. It was really great, extremely hospitable country. But the one main difference between El Salvador and any other country I've seen is the optimism. There's optimism here. People are looking into the future with hope, with plans, with visions. People will tell you, this country, you know, things are way better here than they used to be, versus, of course, like, of course they would say that. Whereas if you go to Germany, for example, people will tell you the opposite. That sounds like a simple thing, but it makes a world of a difference. So here you feel that this country has regained its collective identity, and they are proud to show their country. They're proud to show the things they have, the volcanoes, the surf, the pupusas, the Bitcoin law, even, you know. So you really feel that. And as a Bitcoiner, coming here, another thing I felt very strongly is that I'm welcome here, that I don't get the side eye for being a Bitcoiner, for having a Bitcoin business. Actually, this country wants Bitcoiners to come here. And so, of course, Bitcoiners want to come here. I don't want to be working against the official narrative of my government all the time. That's very tiring and exhausting. And if, like, the moment you experience the opposite, you don't want to go back. This is what happened to me, and it's what happened to a lot of other people. That's why there's so many Bitcoiners here and growing.
I love that, and I've had the pleasure of going to El Salvador twice. Carl and I went twice in 2022. So we went for the first time, I think, in July and August, and then thought, oh, well, we can't wait to come back. This was, because truly, you're right. You can. It's an amazing thing when you see a country where across the board people have hope. They see that there's meaningful progress happening, not just politicians promising to do something and then never doing it, and in the next election they promise a different set of things and they never do it again. And you go back and forth between, at least in America, between our two parties, of each one blaming the last guy for the problems this time, but saying he's fixed everything and now everything's all fine. And it never is, and because our base layer, our monetary layer, is broken, and it's just breaking everything else. But we were thinking, gosh, we cannot wait to go back. And then we got invited to adopting Bitcoin that same year. And so we said, well, It's only a couple months later, but we've got to go back. And so then we got the chance to go back again. And again, just a wonderful experience. And that is a great conference too, just because, again, so many builders are there. So many people from El Salvador are there because they make it very easy for Salvadorans to go to that conference. And again, you have this beautiful feeling of hope. I mean, El Salvador has basically established itself as this Bitcoin Mecca for the world. And it's really quite brilliant. I mean, to say nothing of dropping the crime rate from being one of the highest in the world to the lowest in Latin America, which in a couple of years, which is incredible. Yeah, I mean, it's like when we went there, I mean, I've and Carla too, you know, because we got back and you still get the questions of, oh, did you feel safe? It's like, yeah, it felt a lot safer than walking around Chicago at night, that's for sure. And but people still, I think it takes so long for them to get their preconceived notions out of their head. Because if they heard about El Salvador before a couple of years ago, it wasn't for things like crime rate dropping, tourism going through the roof, and this crazy new Bitcoin law. It was because people were horrible, horrible things were happening there. But that sticks in people's heads. And I find it, and I'm curious of your perception of this now being there on the ground. So much of the Western media, European media and American media is so strangely critical of the progress that El Salvador is making. It feels like they really don't want, yeah, I know, so weird. It feels like they really don't want El Salvador to succeed. It feels like they really want El Salvador to fail. And they, I mean, which is a weird thing to want, because El Salvador failing would mean a regression back to people getting murdered left and right and a wildly corrupt government and gangs. So that's a weird thing to have this sick wish for. But somehow that is seemingly the wish of many in the Western, so-called developed world. What is the read of, you are now on the ground there, you are living there. What do you say to these journalists, quote, that are publishing just outright propaganda and kind of just somehow begging for El Salvador to fail, begging for, it seems, Bukele to fail? What's your experience on the ground, and how do you react to that?
Nobody takes him seriously anymore. They've been doing this for over 5 years now, or for, yeah. Oh, they even did it before he became president. And in the beginning, it was easier to push the narrative because you could, as a journalist or as a big media outlet, you can throw things out there and see what sticks. And it's very hard to prove a negative. So they would, from the very beginning, go, oh, look at that guy, he's a dictator. Now, what's he going to do? Like, all he can do is do his job and then show the receipts. And that's what he did. And then, now 5 years later, they look really damn silly for still trying to push that narrative. And the more time passes, so time really is on his side here. But he had to, and he's still dealing with these accusations and with these stupid headlines. But by now, they have little to no power, because he just has the statistics now. He has the numbers. He has the receipts. And so nobody takes him seriously anymore. The problem is, as you said before, it's very hard to get rid of your preconceived notions. So here on the ground in El Salvador, nobody cares what the mainstream media abroad says. It's like, right. Dude, like, you've probably never been here. You probably got like an assignment from above. And we all kind of know who sits above. So you just kind of do your thing and we don't care. But let's say back in Europe, for example, in the US, there's a shift. Very, very strongly, you can see that happen, which is very interesting. In Europe, parts of Europe too, but still in Europe, these headlines and these nonsense narratives hold more power, probably because it's further away and people know less about how things are run here. And especially in Germany, I always talk about Germany because I'm German. I love my country. I just don't love how it's run. Just want to put that out there.
Amen.
So, especially in Germany, our state media is very prejudiced against El Salvador, and these things stick with you even if you don't want them to. That's very unfortunate, and it happens subconsciously. I noticed it, the same happened to me, even though I thought myself, a very don't trust verify-y Bitcoiner. Before I first came here, I thought I had this like a bit of a gut feeling where I was like, okay, is it actually safe? Like, I don't know, like, never been. So you come here and it's safer than German cities, which again, you couldn't, you it's hard to believe that if you haven't seen it, right? But so nobody with half a brain buys this stuff, but they will keep pushing it so long as they can uphold at least some of that illusion, because they so desperately don't want somebody to show that it can be done differently. There's so many things going on here. One of them just being like this colonialist mindset that you don't want a country that was under the control of foreign powers for decades to suddenly be independent and show, look, we can do this ourselves. And this is what's happening in El Salvador, which is amazing. And what Bukele has done has inspired first the neighboring countries, now the Latin American continent, even the US, and now parts of Europe, which makes him like, it's an amazing legacy that he's building. But certain people don't like that. So, and these certain people control much of the media, and so that's why you get those headlines, even though nobody believes them anymore.
Well, I think it's so interesting. A lot of the Western power structures kind of need Bukele and El Salvador to fail, because if he is successful, which I think he has already proven that he has been successful and is continuing to do so, and you can see that by his approval rating being like the highest in the world or one of the highest in the world. It's hard to argue with that. And you can see that if you actually go to El Salvador and talk to people, because that's one of the things that Carl and I did. And this was in 2022. It was a little, I guess a little under the Bitcoin law was 2021, right? September 2021, I think. So we went there a little under a year after that for the first time, and just asked people, what do you think about this Bitcoin law? What do you think about Bukele? And at that point, some people were fairly ambivalent to the Bitcoin law. It was, like it's fine. Or, some people, wow, I think it's great. This is wonderful. Other people saying, it could have maybe been rolled out a little bit better, but I think it's a pretty good idea. Okay, fair. People were felt free to speak their minds clearly. But then you ask them, what do you think of Bukele? And I did not hear anyone, granted, I didn't talk to every person in the country. This is just my small sample set. I know, but I did. Everyone I talked to said he's taking our country in the right direction, and we have hope for once. That was the synopsis of just about every single conversation that we had there. And that's a really powerful thing. Hope is really powerful. But the entrenched Western power structures, they need to have fear and despair in order to stay in power. They need to keep the populace afraid of the other, afraid of what dangers might happen if the wrong candidate is elected, what might happen if the wrong law is passed. And they also just refuse to do basic things for their citizens, like have, for instance, secure borders, or I don't know, take care of crime. Like, we have amazing, America is a, I, again, I love America, same as you with Germany. I love my country. I don't like how it's run. And I love, my countrymen as well. And it's so sad to see this as governments bloat and bloat and bloat and are still just become less and less effective at actually doing what they're supposed to do, which is protect the private property of their citizens. That's the only reason the government really exists, is to enforce the law. And the only real purpose of the law is to organize for the collective defense of private property. And if you can't do that, if you can't keep people safe from being plundered, either by criminals or by the criminals that are writing the laws, well, then you've just, that's a failed government. That's a failed state. And so I think where you see, you know, Bukele and his methods were certainly controversial, you know, rounding up people with gang tattoos on their faces. And people are saying, how could they possibly be gang members? And I'm sure there were definitely people who were probably wrongfully imprisoned. And I'm sure that I've also seen recent press releases that they're actually working through the legal system to try and remedy that. Great. You know, certainly no government is perfect, and the U.S. doesn't have a leg to stand on when it comes to criticizing that. But if he can do that, if he can make his country safe, then what does that say about all the other governments who refuse to do so, who refuse to protect their citizens? Because if they can do it in El Salvador, a country that's been under the boot of Western powers, under the boot of the IMF for so long, and decided just to make a big change, well, then why can't we do that in America? Then people start to ask questions, and asking questions is very dangerous. You don't want that.
That, yeah.
I don't know. It's amazing to see the Bitcoin exodus happening to El Salvador, though. And I think another great proof of El Salvador going in the right direction is native Salvadorans are moving back home. They're not trying to escape El Salvador to go to the U.S. They're trying to escape from the U.S. back to El Salvador. And not like in the 90s when Bill Clinton deported tons of gang members back to El Salvador. Very different from that. These are people who escaped the violence and are now coming back home. And people like yourself who are finding a new home there. And eating lots of pupusas, I hope.
Loads of them. Loads of them. They're so bad for you, but they're so good.
They're dangerously good.
I want to say, I'm going to get back to the important part in a minute, but just to throw in there, they have, so we all know the pupusas, but generally something that you'll get a lot here is, oh my God, how do they call it? Típico, I think, which means you get like a steak, for example, and then they have a garnish on the side, which is usually beans and rice and plantain and tortillas and cheese and salsa. And oh my God, I'm getting hungry. It's really, really, really good. And that is actually really good for you too. It's probably harder to market this as a specialty dish or like a signature dish for the country, but this is really good and undervalued. But yes, so everything you said, back to the important stuff, is very, very true. And it's so sad that somebody doing their job is so dangerous to the powers that be. It's such a shame. And but it's interesting to see, because Bukele is so good at communicating what he's doing. He's really good at marketing. Obviously, he ran a marketing agency before in his previous life. And he, like, from the beginning, he was using social media, right? And he knew how to appeal to the people. Like, his social media game is, like, right up there, which is part of the reason why he's so good at getting the point across. And then if you look at, does our chancellor in Germany have a Twitter? Probably, like, but it's run by some intern, right? Or, like, sometimes I see what Biden tweets. Like, he doesn't tweet, obviously. But, you know, so that's a huge difference. And that's obviously just a small part of the thing. But he's reaching very, very far. And that's what makes him, part of what makes him a threat in the eye of those who would rather not have the world know that things can be run differently. So they try to focus on, like, whatever they can find that they could use against him. So for the longest time, they'd be going, oh, you're centralizing power, you're such a dictator. What was happening is that he was fighting against his own government, right? So he became president in 2019, and up until they had parliamentary elections in 2021, he had no, whenever he tried to push for something in parliament, which was, like, heavily controlled by the opposition, the two big parties that had run the country for decades prior, would just try to block everything to make him look bad, to keep the status quo, because those were the administrations previously that had heavily benefited from collaboration with gangs, from corruption, and also from, you know, using foreign aid for their own benefit and disappearing money. So when he went and won parliamentary elections and then swapped out the Supreme Court judges, for example. Then, of course, from overseas, he would get an outcry like, oh my God, he's a dictator. What he was doing is make governance more efficient. That's what he's been doing this entire time, what he's been doing since. So, for example, what they did with the new, with the latest election is they shrunk the number of municipalities to streamline governance further. So you see here sort of a shrinking of government rather than a bloating of government, which is good, but you know, we have to sell it as something bad because everything he does is bad. So they try to focus on these things, try to make him look as bad as possible, but it's just not working anymore because you can see the results of what they're doing here. Those are really, really good results. And the interesting thing, or another interesting thing that I can see too, is the reaction from the population here. Right. So another thing you're not supposed to do is talk to the locals like you and Carla did, because how dare you? You must read the headlines. You must not listen to the people whose opinion really matters. They speak very well of Bukele, and B, they speak in a very reflective manner, which is it's rare because in let's look at the US, for example. The US government and both parties. Oh, you have this thing that you always tweet. There's no red, there's no blue, there's the state, and then there's you, right? I love that.
Perfect.
Yeah, like this is so true because both sides will try to put out polarizing statements to just, you know, everything's polarizing in politics. Politics divides these days, divides the people. And so, of course, you shape your audience with the way you speak to them and the things you try to indoctrinate them with. Everybody uses propaganda, but this is the kind of propaganda that you see in most of the world in the US, and we also see it in the EU. We also see it in Germany. We might have more parties, but like it's getting very left-right these days. In El Salvador, from the beginning, this administration spoke to its people in a very logical, rational way, with common sense, with no left-right division. They do things to make life better, that they don't go and promise the moon and the stars and rainbows and butterflies. They said, for example, when Bukele introduced his territorial control plan, which is how they got rid of the gangs, he said, look, this is going to be really difficult and hard, and our GDP might suffer because this was a parallel state, basically. But we're going to do it, you know? And they did it. And people react the same way to it because this is what they're being told. They see, okay, our government uses common sense. So I will react to them with common sense. So they will tell you, yeah, things are good. Some things are bad. You know, I hope they fix this. I hope they fix that. But they've already done this, and I see they're working on that. Maybe this didn't work so well, but that worked well. And we understand that they're trying their best, and we look at things in a reflective manner, which is what you want, but it's not. I can't even blame the people in Germany, for example, or in the US. I can't even really blame people because if you're just being indoctrinated with polarizing, like battle language, what are you gonna do? Like, of course that sticks with you, right? So sad.
It is, and it's honestly just such the way that political structures are in the US or in the EU, it all comes down to promoting really short-term thinking. It from a to use Seyfedin's, low time preference versus high time preference, the either two-party or multi-party or whatever it may be that we see across the Western world and throughout Europe, it's very high time preference. It's always next election, next election. Doesn't actually matter what we get done, as long as we can have enough things on our checklist that show, look, at least we kept this campaign promise, but the only reason we couldn't do the other things was because of the other guys. And if only they weren't so evil, then we would, everything would be sunshine and daisies. And this happens just every election cycle, over and over again. And there's never actually meaningful change. Things just start getting, or continue getting progressively a little bit worse and a little bit worse while your money buys less and less and less. And what I, at least my external read and the read from, being in El Salvador a couple of times was there is more long-term thinking taking place. Not that he's going to try and crown himself a dictator for 1,000 years, as some in the Western media might have you believe, but that this isn't about, he's not doing things to try and figure out how he's going to win the next election. He's doing things because they're going to be good for his country. And clearly that worked with he was just reelected. So clearly just what doing actually good things and keeping promises and making life better is actually keeps people really happy. Who would have thought the formula was so simple? Just do what you say you're going to do, make people's lives better, and don't promise things that you're never going to do just because they sound good at the moment and they're a good soundbite on that debate stage or something. So I really think so much of it is that short-term versus long-term thinking. It seems to me that he's trying to set El Salvador up not just for himself to get reelected in a couple of years, but for that country to continue lifting itself up and becoming an economic powerhouse. It's a small country, but people around the world are talking about that small country now, and it's for good reasons. It's because their tourism went through the roof. Their GDP is up. All of the fear-mongering, the FUD, really, about their, Bukele's Bitcoin bet. Like, whoa, it's, when Bitcoin was low, it was really easy to say that. Now it's not so easy to make fun of, Bukele for his bet. It starts to look like a very good investment in the long-term economic health of his country. It's nice to see,
That's not a way to spin it. Don't worry. I'm sure.
Yeah. Clearly the IMF is no fans of him because they can, he now is making it so that he does not in the future need to take their strings attached money, which I think is wonderful because they have certainly done a great deal of harm around the world. And really, what does it come down to? It comes down to the IMF basically exists to try and hide the inflation that is rampant in Western developed countries by exporting that inflation to underdeveloped countries and making sure they stay underdeveloped so they can't actually pick themselves up and become successful because they don't want them successful. Then they'd make their own decisions. And again, you can't have people asking questions and making their own decisions. That's very, very bad for business.
Security or something? Like, are you safe saying these things?
I think so. Well, it's America. Speaking so I have the number of guns that I have is more than zero. And I also like to I like to hide weapons around my house, which might seem a little bit crazy, but I enjoy it. So yes, I'll
make a little hodler with like a little pocket or something.
Oh, now that's an idea. Okay, I'm gonna have to cut this part out just so people don't know that. don't look in the little. There's no guns in the little hodler. I swear, they're just innocent now. It's really nice to hear this perspective. Cause again, I haven't been back since 2022. And so from the first time you came, you visited El Salvador to when you decided to move, how long was that timeline?
I came in August and I moved in October.
Oh, wow. So you just said, let's do it.
Yeah. But that's sort of like, I've been doing that my whole life. Like I don't really, I don't recommend it, but I don't like, I've been faring pretty well with it.
Yeah.
The thing is that I've moved country many times, so I lived in many places. Sometimes it was for work, sometimes it was for other reasons, sometimes it was out of curiosity, and then I just love traveling too. But El Salvador, I came here because of, I don't even think, I can name a million rational reasons, but then it also just, there has to be, the chemistry has to be right. And I just, sometimes I get comments, actually not sometimes, I often get comments where people are like, oh, but what if you move now and then things go downhill again? Like, I don't know, Bukele leaves office and then things go worse or whatever. Yeah, sure, you can think that way, but then you're planning for a collision course. So what I want to do, it goes both ways. So in one way, this country welcomes us This country wants us. Like, I've tried to get visas in countries that made it so hard. My own country makes it extremely hard for you to move there, unless you're from a certain from a certain region of the world. I don't want to. So
we have the same immigration policy in America. It's very hard to move to America legally. It's very easy to move to America illegally, which is
that's a very nice.
It took Carla 13 years to become a citizen here. With a father who came as a communist refugee, or I should say communist defector, fleeing some shit. Communism's a bitch, it turns out. not a picnic. I know. I'm curious if I can ask you, because I think, again, a lot of people are probably finding themselves at this place where maybe they're unhappy with what's the direction their own country is heading. Maybe they're feeling like they need a change. Maybe they're Bitcoiners and they're feeling like, you know what? I want to go somewhere where I feel I'm welcome, in a country that is really having a Bitcoin strategy at not just the local level, because that's where things started in El Salvador. It started with El Zante, with Bitcoin Beach. It started from the bottom, but then now it's coming down from the top as well, hopefully meeting somewhere in the middle. But what's your message to people who are maybe they're thinking about it, maybe they've been toying with the idea? What would you say to those people, as kind of based on your experience? Like, I don't know, what message do you have for folks who are saying, should I consider El Salvador?
Question, and I get it more and more. I get it more and more, even from my own country people, which is amazing to see, because normally we are the last to do anything, and we have, like, we feel very, again, I love my country, but we are so settled in our comfort zone, it's really dangerous for us. We've been so privileged for a long time that we thought ourselves on top of the world, and slowly this illusion is crumbling in the eyes of the public, whereas our government's still trying to uphold it, of course, desperately so, with less and less success. So people are starting to look elsewhere increasingly. And what's also happening is people are starting to look outside of the EU, because a lot of people think, rightfully so, I think, that if you think things in Germany are going downhill because of government overreach, because of mismanagement of everything, because of our failing currency and those things, then you will not be better off in another EU country. So people are trying to look outside of the EU. And El Salvador is increasingly becoming present on the map and on people's radars. The thing is that, again, because headlines stick with you subconsciously, because it's very far, possibly, because you may not have heard much about it, and if you did, it was for gangs and war. And, you know, now the narrative has shifted to, yeah, sure, things are better, but what if? What if? So it's easy to procrastinate and to then not do it. The best thing you can do is just come, if you can, obviously. If you are toying with the idea of coming here, just come here, you know, just come for a trip. It's very, very nice. I did that. And then the rest will fall into place. So it's easy to overthink things. And I am very guilty of that myself. Like, traveling the world has made me better at not doing that. And just, you know, you throw yourself in situations where you have no time to overthink. But generally, you know, you got nothing to lose. Come here, you'll eat great food, you'll see volcanoes everywhere, you'll have amazing weather, you'll meet awesome people, and you'll probably want to stay. And then you go from there. It's actually not very complicated. So, it's very simple. Everything's really simple, if you want it to be.
I like that. That's good advice. And yeah, for anyone, whether you're thinking of moving to El Salvador or not, I would highly recommend at least going to visit, because it is a wonderful, wonderful place to visit. I mean, you can, San Salvador is a really a great city. It's and clearly on the up and up. I saw that library that they put in, which just looks incredible. And then you can also find your way to, you know, on the same day, you can be hiking up a volcano, and then, you know, go and surf in the afternoon. Like, it's pretty incredible, to be able to do that. And I love the terrain in that country. Like, it is like every road that you're driving on, you're like, oh, this is just beautiful. Like, there's these vistas everywhere, whether you're along the coast or going through the, you know, the countryside. It's like, wow, this is truly stunningly beautiful. It's a treat.
We saw a huge spider yesterday, like this big.
Oh, geez, you can't tell Carla that. Oh boy, she is not a fan of spiders. Wow. Okay.
No, me neither. But
a tarantula.
We went to a volcano. I don't know. I also don't like spiders.
So. Okay, sorry. Too many questions on the spider.
No, but I was getting to a point with that because that's not a great advertisement.
Yeah.
There was a purpose behind the statement. We went to a volcano. Not a volcano. The other thing. A waterfall. We went to a waterfall yesterday, and we just like hiked up the waterfall. Or there was actually 7 waterfalls in one. You do like a 4-hour hike around it. The thing is, you have beautiful terrain. You can be like, there's a volcano over there, and I can like literally over there, and I can be at the beach in 45 minutes. And the climate is gonna be different. It's really amazing. And in the same spirit, you can get to a bunch of waterfalls very quickly, or to the forest, or whatever. And two things: A, because this country is severely underestimated and severely undervalued, like Bitcoin. You will not have many tourists here yet. It's a temporary privilege. If you come here, you can take photos without a bunch of tourists in the background. The second thing is, the nature is so raw and natural. And that is amazing. You get, oh my God, I can't even explain it. So if you see nature in Europe, it's like, it's organized nature. It's regulated. Somebody has already been there. So everything's like in, I don't know, I feel like everything's in within norms. I can't even really explain it. So here you get that raw feeling of, you go into the wilderness and you see beautiful, untouched nature without all the dangerous animals, by the way. So a lot of times if you go into the jungle, like, you're going to have lots of like big dangerous or small dangerous animals. So they told us the spider yesterday was not dangerous. Still didn't touch it, but
fair enough.
So here you're not like, you'll have some animals. You have pumas. I never seen one, but apparently there's pumas here. You have snakes, but apparently most of them are not dangerous. You have spiders, I've learned. You have monkeys, and you have like geckos and stuff, but you don't have like crocodiles or hippos or things that easily kill you. So it's actually very fun to go into nature, and you don't have to worry about not coming back. so it's a great, and you get there very, very easily. And again, locals will be so happy to show you around. We had a local guide yesterday. It was really, really great. And then I took a very epic photo by the waterfall, by one of the waterfalls. And yeah, so it's really awesome. Come.
It's a good pitch, and honestly, like, that was one thing I was, it's like, if you travel these days, generally just about everywhere you go, there's going to be a lot of tourists, and that's fine. Like, that's a good thing, right? To see a lot of tourists. And we saw, like, I mean, clearly tourism in El Salvador is exploding, because you can look at the numbers and see that it's up. I don't know how many, it's probably like 200% now or something. I think it was well in the hundreds last time I checked, but it's exploding. But it doesn't feel like everything is overcrowded. I mean, and it's a small country, but things, there's a very relaxed vibe there. And like, again, something I saw was just that I think it's really hard to overstate how much of an impact the people having hope is, like genuine hope, and not just the hope of, I hope things get better. The hope that comes with seeing things get better and realizing this is just the start of how good they can get, especially after, I mean, they have a rough history, and they're very aware of that history and of the struggles that they've had. And I think that makes the success they're having now all the more important and meaningful for them. It's a beautiful thing to see.
What's for us to imagine, for many of us to imagine, is being, for the first time, being able to walk outside at night without being scared, to walk with your phone in your hand, to wear Nike clothes or Adidas or something like that, to meet your friends after sunset, to go clubbing without being worried, to send your kids to school without being worried. Many people have not had that feeling their entire lives. This country has been under the control of corrupt governments working with gangs, under the control of a parallel government run by these gangs for decades. People my age have not seen El Salvador this way up until Bukele went into office. This is extremely significant, and of course then people will not understand, and I also don't understand why then from overseas what you hear is, oh, but this is not good. Well, you should go back to the way, well, they will not say it, but they want things to go back to the way they were before. And that is like a slap in the face. So human rights organizations will say, hey, but you're treating these criminals very badly. Where were they before when these criminals were killing people every day, were extorting people, when you wanted to maybe open a business, but you couldn't because the moment you did, the gangs would come and demand money from you, and otherwise they would kill you or your children or your family? Those are real things that happened. I have heard so many stories. Like, every Salvadoran will have their own story to tell about their experience with the gangs. This was, it was so bad that you could, so, you know, people would, like, we would then say, oh, why don't you go to the police? Because the police, too, was either corrupt or extorted. Police officers are also humans. They also have family. They were also extorted by the gangs. It was that bad. And this has ended. It is such a shift. And this is just, I mean, it's one of the main things that Bukele has done here, but it's just one of the things he has done, right? So another thing he has done is he has, it's very interesting if you look back at his political career. So, you know, he started as the mayor of a small town south of San Salvador. From that very time, he was pushing very dreamy language, let's say. Like, he was really going out there and going this, like, this ethereal route and saying, hey, we should not think ourselves small, because this is what's being told to us from above, from all these supranational organizations that want us to think we are not able to be independent. We must not believe them. We must allow ourselves to have hopes and dreams. We must allow ourselves to build something bigger than ourselves. He was pushing this his entire political career, and obviously the higher he would climb the ladder, the more power he would have to convey that message. So you could see it in the policies that he was pushing. He was, as mayor of San Salvador, for example, he was doing these streetlight installations. He was cleaning up the old town and doing a lot of visual things, where then, of course, detractors would go and say, oh, but that's so unimportant. Like, no, it's not unimportant. It's in addition to providing safety and security to the people, he provided them with the ability to be proud of their country for many for the first time in their lives. And he helped, you know, he did the Surf City project, for example. So he actively worked on building a collective identity, because as a country, and again, you feel it when you come here, I'm German, so I know if you are not proud, if you are taught not to be proud of your country, if you are taught to be eternally ashamed of your country, we Germans are brought up thinking that it is very bad to put a country flag up by your window or by your car or whatever. Like, we do this every 4 years for the World Cup, but that's about it. And if you do it outside of that time frame, then that's weird. Why would you do that? So I know what it means to feel like borderline ashamed of your nationality. He fixed that. And that's also part of the reason why people are so proud. They're so happy. They're so optimistic and energetic. And that, I do not understand why you would demonize that. They had a democratic election. He won by a landslide. People are so happy to have him here. Is everything perfect? Of course not. But nobody ever said that. So it's just sad to see that this is what's being pushed. But it's great to see that it's slowly stepping to work, that people are no longer buying these narratives and that people are making up their own minds. And that, you know, it's thanks to social media, it's thanks to this like information getting out there, and it's thanks to the receipts that are being shown here. And that's the good thing. That's a silver lining.
I think it's one of those things where I like to think about Bitcoin and all the FUD that Bitcoin gets is all they can do, and I use they in the collective to mean the media, you know, but we know who they are in this context, but all they can do is lie. And all we need to do is tell the truth, because the truth, when the truth is on your side, all you have to do is tell it and show the receipts. And all your opposition can do in the case of Bitcoin is lie about it, is invent stories, is use old tropes that play on people's ingrained notions of what something is. And it feels like that's a very parallel parallel comparison to El Salvador, where all the Western media can do is try and play on all the preconceived notions about El Salvador. They can try to spin up lies and you know, okay, now that things are going well, they can fearmonger about the future and what that's going to be. And all El Salvador needs to do and Bukele needs to do is just to tell the truth and to show that, look, this is what's happening. We're not trying to hide anything. We've been very, you know, it's not like they were sneaky about rounding up all of the gang members. They were very public about it and very proud of it. And as you said, people feel safe. And because they feel safe, they can have hope for the future, and they can have the hope to start a business or for people in their family who moved away years ago to come back and say, wow, I can come back to my family now. I can start something here in El Salvador. That's a very powerful thing. And I think, again, when the truth is on your side, you are in the position of power. And all your detractors can do is try to say the lie enough times that maybe a few people believe it. But, you know, I think it was Martin Luther King who said, a lie cannot live. Like, the lie will die eventually. It's just a matter of time. And so it's nice to see, and I mean, Bukele even came in and spoke at the CPAC, in the U.S., the Conservative Conference, and was very well received. And I think we both know another reason that perhaps the Western media and establishment is not a fan of him is because he talks about how money actually works. You know, he did this on Tucker Carlson's show, too, a couple of years ago. He talks about how fiat money works very honestly and candidly, and in his... I mean, he is a very good speaker. I'll say that. It's quite impressive in multiple languages. So really, bravo to him. But clearly, he's showing that a country can be successful without being suckling at the poisonous teat of the International Monetary Fund. Yes, El Salvador is still a dollarized country, but has adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. And he's also very, very vocal about money being broken. And that's because, again, he's just telling the truth there. He's not making up any lies about how the fiat monetary system works. He's just telling the truth. But a lot of people haven't heard that truth. And that sounds very shocking. But it's powerful.
Because it reveals the playbook of the powers that be, which is speak the truth, you must be a conspiracy theorist. It's very easy to do with normal people. It gets harder to do when you are a head of state. So there has to be a way to discredit you, which then, of course, explains a lot of the headlines and a lot of the dictator authoritarian stuff that is being thrown at him. And it no longer really sticks because, of course, he's proving them wrong. And there, you know, you mentioned the parallel, and I really agree. Parallel between El Salvador and Bitcoin is that the truth comes out in the end. And like I've said for a long time that, I mean, it's not a big revelation, but one of our strongest arguments as Bitcoiners is time. Time is on our side, because with time, we prove everybody wrong. Because all these nonsense narratives, they don't stick. And you can see that with Bitcoin. And you can also see that with things that are happening in El Salvador. And then it's kind of poetic then for El Salvador to adopt Bitcoin. And it's so funny to see a head of state talk about money the way he does. And the rest of the world, like, scrambling and being like, oh my God, he said the quiet part out loud. No, what are we going to do? Like, yeah.
It's so true. And meanwhile, in the US, they're, you know, we just blame greedy corporations or the other political party, or that's the favorite one. And it's funny, but you know, I think he's certainly pulling back the veil a little bit, and he's challenging that status quo of what are you supposed to do or not do as an elected leader. And I mean, in my mind, and again, from the limited people I've talked to, and I want to caveat this, I have not talked to every person in the country, and I'm sure there are people who hate Bukele and think he's doing a terrible job. Sure. But from the people that I've talked to and the things that I've seen in my limited experience going there a couple of times and seeing him speak, seeing how he acts on social media, seeing the speeches he gives, he seems to be trying to do what is right for his people and what's going to lift his country up. And the results seem to speak for themselves so far. And again, time will continue to tell the story of whether or not this is successful. But so far, this, you know, experiment, as I think is it's often characterized in the Western media, the experiment of doing things that are good for your people and doing things that are good for your sovereignty as a nation, it seems to be working. And now I think it's pretty beautiful to see Bitcoin starting to do what we all were waiting for Bitcoin to do, that it does every 4 years as we approach the supply getting cut in half, which is it starts to go wild. And he starts to look, it gets very hard to say, well, this was just a gamble on Bitcoin, or you're gambling with your nation's economy somehow. It's like, turns out not being on a Bitcoin standard is a bit more of a gamble. The fiat standard seems to be much more of a gamble than the Bitcoin standard. So again, time will tell, but yeah. it is a shame
that way too. Yeah, because he really understands it too. So you have a lot of politicians who will use Bitcoin when they feel like it's good for their image, which is a very politician thing to do. Use things that make you look good. and you know, in a way, he really rebranded the politician label, at least for himself, in a way that, you know, being called a politician is like, this is like almost an insult.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will say, actually, he's not a politician, he's a leader, which is interesting. But anyway, wait, what was I saying? He really understands Bitcoin.
Yeah.
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 He really understands it versus a lot of people who just use it for short-term gain. So they adopted Bitcoin. He did an interview at the time with Peter McCormack, mm-hmm. Where you could really tell that he understands the concept. And also in general, you know, I also talked to him around the time. He really understands Bitcoin deeply, which says a lot for somebody who, unlike us, doesn't spend 24/7 on Bitcoin Twitter or reading about Bitcoin or working on Bitcoin. He's a president. He has a country to run. He understands it very, very well. And so when Bitcoin tanked after the Bitcoin law went into effect, he could have said, oh, okay, yeah, that didn't work out, let's just like quietly get rid of this and shine a light on other things that we're doing. They did not do that. They huddled their way, they stacked their way through the bear market, and now they're going to reap the rewards. And now the rest of the world is going to go look, and it probably is going to go the same way, like, oh, they're so lucky. But they're going to look and they're going to be like, oh, you know, we might copy that. El Salvador had nobody to copy. El Salvador was the first. And they had a very rough start because they started through a bear market. And now, you know, it's very glorious that they're going to see, like, they're going to get they're going to reap the rewards now, and this low time preference is going to pay off big time. And it is not a gamble. It is not by chance. They knew exactly what they were doing, and that is so. They're not going to get credit for that, but we know. We know they're badass.
Amen. That is. I think that's a very glorious note to wrap things up on, because your time is, like Bitcoin, is scarce. So I want to thank you for sharing that scarce time, because Bitcoin podcasts are very abundant. So thank you for coming on this one. It's really been a pleasure. It's been great to chat with you, to hear this story. It makes me want to go back to El Salvador again, because it's been too long. This time we'll have a new member of our family in tow, and we go, can't wait to give him his first pupusa. He's gonna love it. Yeah, he's a cool little guy. But before we close out, just anywhere you want to, I'll link your Twitter and your Noster and the website. Is there anywhere else that people should go? It's the website is, let's see, it's thelittlehodler.com. Yeah. If they want to get one of these bad boys.
Twitter is my very German name, which is, at this point, just read it in the show notes, I guess, because German.
Well, you say the German name. You're still proud of your German heritage, so it's all good.
Lina Zeiche. Nobody can pronounce it.
Zeiche. It has the sh- okay. Was decent?
Decent? Can you say that again?
Zeiche.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I am.
That was great.
I'm glad. See, now I know how to say it when I'm doing the intro for the show. This was actually just a trick to make sure I wasn't going to butcher your last name. So I was like, I can say Lena just fine, but Zeiche. Okay. Now, if I say it too many times, I'm going to start screwing it up. So I've got to take the win here.
I'm so happy.
But I'll link all of this in the show notes. It's really been a pleasure, and looking forward to seeing you in person. Sure, maybe at a conference or perhaps in El Salvador again.
Wait, this has been very long.
And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. If you are a Bitcoin-only company interested in sponsoring another fucking Bitcoin podcast, head to bitcoinpodcast.net or hit me up on social media. On Noster, head to primal.net/walker. And on Twitter, search for @WalkerAmerica or @TitcoinPodcast. You can also watch the video version of this show on X or on YouTube by going to youtube.com/@WalkerAmerica or Rumble by searching for @WalkerAmerica. Bitcoin is scarce. There will only ever be 21 million. But Bitcoin podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time to listen to another fucking Bitcoin podcast. Until next time, stay free.